C1SP. Number 12B.
So in this tone, which goes over about a page and a half, she builds up this consciousness of principleless truth. And she builds it up and shows first that in order to understand that mind is infinite, not bound by corporeality and so on, that we arrive at man's true nature and existence. You see, first she shows that mind science is that which gives us the true answer to man's nature and existence. In other words, she shows, all right, let's interpret the whole universe from the standpoint of mind, because only mind, divine mind, can tell us what is the true nature of man and the universe. And then she goes on in the next paragraph and shows that all we correctly know of spirit comes from God, divine principle. You see, she goes to the subtone of spirit, where she shows that as we ponder, as we thoroughly learn and properly digest all that which comes from God, divine spirit, then the calculus of divine ideas begins to move in us. First you have to turn away from mortal mind and turn to the immensity of mind, divine mind, because mind alone can give the true concept. In turning to mind, we have to ponder and digest and think and calculate about the ideas of mind. So we get the calculus of spirit, the rhythm of spirit, where the ideas of mind are digested and pondered and loved and valued and so on. And as that goes on, she says that we can calculate the divine just as exactly or even more exactly than the astronomer can calculate an eclipse. This mind reading is the opposite of clairvoyance. It's the illumination of spiritual understanding. She says, yes, the more we ponder and culture these divine ideas, thinking out from mind and staying in that mind and pondering them and calculating them, the more this pondering becomes tangible and concrete and definite, it becomes spiritual understanding, which demonstrates the capacity of soul and not of material sense. This soul sense comes to the human mind when the latter yields to the divine mind. You see, though as we see, the more we devote in consciousness ourselves to reading the divine mind, everything that is in the nature of ideas, calculate these ideas and love this idea, digest these ideas, the more something definite in us grows, and the more something definite becomes in us in the line of spiritual understanding. And that comes in through that willingness to let the human mind go. Then she goes further and shows that such intuitions which come out of this spiritual understanding, out of this infinite capacity of soul, that such intuition reveal whatever constitutes and perpetuates harmony, enabling us to do good but not evil, and so to discern the error which needs to be destroyed. See, now we come to a touch of principle that through spiritual understanding, through the definite sense that grows within us, that something, that the harmony of being, the whole constitution of being, the constitution of principle and of what principle explains and needs to explain, begins to realize in consciousness. And through a realization of truth, we always discern its opposite. Through the law of opposites, we always discern through a discernment of truth its opposite claim, the counterfeit, the error that needs to be destroyed. And she goes on and says, well, now the touch of life says, well, that's the method we always have to use. That's the method Jesus used, that's the method he asked his disciples to use, that's the method we should use, that's the method which really we should use to discern the signs of the times. whereas spiritualism, mentalism, only discerns the signs of materiality, only the material signs, only that which has a physical phenomena. We must see what is the spiritual need of today. Herein lies prophecy, herein lies purpose, divine purpose, Christian purpose, to discern the need of the hour, and not just to be inquisitive in other people's affairs. And so she comes further and comes to a point of truth, and says, through that method, which is always the same method, the method of that little touch of mind and spirit and soul and principle, that's always the same method to apply. That's what John Dolittle said so often. I always start with mind, you see. It's always, in every case, it's the life method. And what needs to be destroyed is the error, which needs to be destroyed is always the error such. In the touch, in the tone of truth, then she shows that it was that Jesus' rebuke and condemnation were sharp. His thrusts at materialism were sharp. He never spared hypocrisy, the sternest condemnation. But you see, it was always aimed at error such, never at hypocrites. He didn't destroy the hypocrites. He didn't destroy the materialists. His thrust was always against error such. We handle error such, never personal error. We are in principle as truth, and that naturally always handles error as such. He handled, as it is here, hypocrisy and materialism and so on. He knew that the generation to be wicked and adulterous, seeking the material more than the spiritual, and so on. So, and lastly, she says, the great teacher knew both cause and effect, knew that truth communicates itself and never imparts error. Well, that's naturally always the divine purpose. That's always the divine purpose of every treatment, that seeing the error as error and not as a person, we destroy error as such, as a claim. That's the point of truth. And not for the purpose of destroying something, but the ultimate person, the aim of it is to establish truth, to impart truth and communicate truth and impart truth and never error. So here Mrs. Eddy shows really the method, I would say the attitude with which we approach any situation which needs to be corrected. Now I said, Mrs. Dolly has in the practice book given many times the indication of this method. I think in the questionnaire I gave a few indication from John Dolly's practice book, where you can read over what he said. When I look back on those talks, I think that's the point that stood out to me mostly from the whole week's talk, namely that method, how we can take a proper attitude with which to approach a situation. See, the situation to be approached, as we have seen in spiritualism, in the first subject of spiritualism, is that in spiritualism we consider a physical situation as a physical situation. We say, you look not well, and you are weak, and you feel you are nervous, and so on. So we begin with the you, and we begin with the physical manifestation of error. That's how spiritualism begins, and says, now we treat that. Against that stands that pure and sanctify the attitude of a Christian Science treatment, which turns away, right from the beginning, turns away from the carnal mind's picture and turns to the divine mind. And then begins that whole couplet. I'm just going to read you from Mr. Dawley's book the points in this order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, as he says it. But the tone of it is the same as we have it here. You see, he would say first, the first point of mind, he would say, when the carnal mind is lying about your patient, that he has a tumor, that he has a cancer, that he has decayed lungs, that he has a cough, or that he has this or that, and the other, there is just one thing for you to do as a metaphysician, and that is to turn away from that whole picture. See, now he begins to turn away from the spiritualistic outlook, to put it behind you mentally, and look out into immensity, into eternity, into infinity, and begin to think about God. See, that just as he said, first we have, in this immortal mind reading, we have first to see that mind is all and infinite, and that only from that point of view we see the universe of mind. Then, as we have taken the right turn towards immortal mind reading, then the pondering comes in. Then spirit comes in. He would put it like that. You can only reason rightly from God. See, just as Mrs. Eddy says, all we correctly know of spirit comes from God. Divine principle. He also said, you can only reason rightly from God and to begin to know what God is, what mind is, what spirit is, what soul is, what principle is, what life is, what truth is, what love is, and about man in God's image and likeness as conscious idea, expressing the nature of infinity, of omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. You see, you begin to get the calculus, the rhythm of these ideas. Or he would say, then you think to yourself, because God is mind, man is idea. Because God is spirit, man is ordered and substantial idea. Because God is soul, man is sinless idea, incorporeal, always identified. Because God is principle, man is an idea, always demonstrated. He lives in the realm of science and system. Because God is life, man is eternal idea. Because God is truth, man is perfect manhood, consciousness. Because God is love, man lives, moves, and has its being in the realm of fulfillment and completeness. You see, how the second step was always first, after turning to mind, to the infinitude of mind, leaving the mortal picture right behind, right out of sight, then beginning to think, now, what is this God? What is this God in its infinitude? Begin to think about this God now. What is God as mind? What is God as spirit? What is it as soul, as principle, as life and truth and love? What then is man as his idea? What then is man's nature as the idea of mind, the idea of spirit, the idea of soul, and so on, you see? And then he says, what happens then? And then he goes to the third, where Mrs. Eddy also said, then the spiritual understanding becomes to be illumined, and the capacity of soul, the definiteness of soul, becomes apparent in one. The same thing he said, as you begin to think in this way, quite apart from the picture of a sick mortal or a sinning mortal, you see, separated. And as you lift up mentally the true idea of God and of man, you will find that your thought will begin to develop along a certain definite line. You see, now comes in the definiteness of spiritual now comes in spiritual understanding. And that definite line along which your thought develops is that man's true identity. That definite sense that comes of to you of the true man made in God's image and likeness is that man's true identity. As that becomes clearer and clearer, That is the Christ translation coming to you. See, Mrs. Eddy said, then the human mind yields to the divine mind. He goes on and says, soul is exchanging the objects of sense for the ideas of soul. And you are identifying the one life. So you can see how he comes to the third. And then he said, when then that happens, then he comes also to the fourth, where Mrs. Eddy says, that reveals whatever constitutes harmony, and that by the law of opposites discerns the error that needs to be destroyed. Mr. Dawley says, if you are spiritually minded and you understand the things of God, that is, if you put on the mind of Christ, you will always be able to discern the governing error in every situation. See, there are just other terms and other words, but the rhythm, the logic, the sequence is exactly the same as Mrs. Eddy has put it here. Only that Mr. Dawley in various ways tried to elaborate, embellish this order. And then usually he would say, in every case, I would sit down and say, now I put the whole mortal picture behind me and I look into the immense. You see, always the same method. He said, that's not the method which applies to one case, that's the method of practice. What Mrs. Eddy says here too, it's the life practice. And then he would show that as he does that, that the error would yield. That the thrust of truth, thrust at error, would be sharp enough that situation would yield. For what purpose? Not for the lust of having power over matter, but for the love of establishing truth, of communicating truth and imparting truth, love. So, if one takes such an attitude, you see, to read a situation, to have the immortal mind reading which says, now I wonder what's behind the situation. What a difference if I go and ask spirits, and the spirit will tell me, well, he has this disease and that disease. And perhaps will tell me, well, he will get well after so many weeks or so, or will tell, no, that's finished, he will die from it, and so on. But what a difference to turn away from that whole hullabaloon of mortal mind thinking and to turn to the infinitude of mind and stay there. And by staying there, we are not putting our nose up into the clouds, but as we see, it has a Christ. By the law of opposites, if we touch principle, that what constitutes the true man, true universe, and the harmony of a situation, that touches also by the law of opposites the very error that needs to be destroyed. But then we touch that error, as we will see afterwards in a later subject, then it touches that error which is primal in a situation, and not secondary or at the third place. We touch primal mortal mind, the primal claim of a situation. Well, what a difference, and what a... I always get a sense of sanctity when I compare spiritualism with Christian Science. That Christian Science is a method which is sanctified, which is hallowed. Can you say hallowed? Yes. And then we come to the last point, principle as love. And in this last point, in principle as love, Mrs. Eddy shows that the purpose of divine mind reading is really to be susceptible to the needs of the human mind. You see, that it is really loving for the human mind. That the purpose of divine mind reading is not just, as I said before, to be in the absolute and somewhere up in the clouds, but that it is a Christ, as we have seen, that it has the Christ power, and that it has the Christ power for the one and only purpose to help all those motions in the human mind, all that which moves in the human mind towards a higher spiritual aim. And so she gives here the incident of Jesus when he said, when he asked, "Who touched me?" And when the disciples who weren't spiritually susceptible to a call said, "Well, the people throng you, everybody touches you." And he asked again, and then a woman was there who reached out for his aid. And his spirituality was susceptible for this call for aid. So you see that the divine mind reading is not something which is only which is only in the absolute, but as it has a Christ, it has always the ability to translate itself to that point which wants to be resurrected and needs to be resurrected. It translates itself, it is on communicable terms, always with that in the human mind which longs which longs for the divine, which longs for spirituality. And so, in that measure, Jesus, in this instance, he illustrated how he could reach and touch and communicate with all that in the human mind which is longing for the divine mind and for help. And so he could help. That's the love of reading Immortal Mind, that it does, that it is a help and an aid. Well, that brings me to the end of this fourth subject on principle. Let me just recapitulate quickly what she has said here. In principle, the question was, what is the standpoint of reading thought? And the principle says, well, there is one right standpoint of reading any situation mentally, namely the divine standpoint, immortal mind reading. Whereas other mental systems, like spiritualism, rely on mortal mind from which they read their own beliefs. This mind reading is shown here, first principle as mind, that mind reading is possible. And that the mind reading is reading mind and not people. That therefore it doesn't matter where people are, if they are here or not here, if they are living or dead, it doesn't matter. What we read is mind. But then she calls the principle of spirit and says, but let there be order and classification in mind. Not every mind is just mind. There are different states of consciousness. And she shows that there is no intercommunication or communication between different states of consciousness. That there is only communication within the own realm of consciousness. That the spiritual can never communicate with the material. The immortal can never be conscious of the mortal. And so on. Having shown that this mind reading is only possible within its own categories, then she shows that we must see which category is superior to the other. And denies the claim of spiritualism, which just says, well, each mentality is equal in might, power, presence, and so on, as any other mentality. And so she shows that we should let ourselves be influenced by the higher sense of mind, by divine mind, and not by mortal mind. Having shown that we should identify ourselves with the divine mind, she says, then you can take the position of immortal mind reading. wherefrom your oneness with the divine mind, you read the divine purpose of this divine mind. And that's the content of your mind reading, that you read the purpose of the divine mind. Whereas mortal mind just reads the content of its own mortal beliefs and only touches therefore human beliefs. But reading mind from the standpoint of the divine mind, within the realm of the divine mind, for the purpose of the divine mind, we become seers and prophets involuntary. We begin to see how this divine principle is going to do something to any claim of error, and to any form and any realm of mortal belief. Namely, it becomes truth, principle as truth, the savior. And becomes the savior where it begins, first in individual cases, sometimes more in a collective case, and finally in universal problems, to discern the error which needs to be destroyed and destroys it as an error as such. And so, in the last tone of principle as love, we see that in this divine mind reading there is really love. There is true love. Whereas lot of mentalism is full of curse. There is a lot of cursing in most systems of mentalism. Prophesying doom and sickness and curse and death and accidents and I don't know what. Whereas here we see this mind reading can only be, this immortal mind reading can only be applied for the good.